First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome along to The First Serve. Great to have your company on this Monday night. Brett Phillips in the chair. We do it every Monday night right across the SEN network. We talk the world of tennis, and there is plenty going on very, very far from where we are, Miami. I was there 2 years ago. The first version at the new Hard Rock Stadium, well, not new Hard Rock Stadium, but the first time Miami Open had been at the Hard Rock Stadium, and it was fantastic. But I was watching the players today, just remembering how hot it can get in Miami. Not necessarily the temperature, but the actual humidity. And to watch Daniil Medvedev today, like a crab, for that last little part of the game against Alexei Poprin, and to watch a few other players, because some matches have gone the journey on both the men's and the women's tour during this Miami Open. So they are certainly earning their money. Happy to take your calls tonight, 1-300-736-736. Or you can get us on the Tennis Direct text, 0433981116. Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery on orders over $150. Great supporters of ours. You can go direct to their website, tennisdirect.com.au right now. First Serve listeners can get a 10% discount store-wide. 1-300-736-736. Love to take your calls. Anything you'd like to talk about, Miami, anything bubbling around domestically, a good tennis story that we might know about here at the First Serve. You have a forum here every Monday night for an hour. You can call up whenever you like. You call, we put you to air, and you're guaranteed to get a prize. No doubt about that. So give us a call, 1-300-736-736. Got the Sunbless sunscreen to give away, their First Serve tennis sunscreen, which is an absolute beauty. And if you do go on their website, sunblesssunscreens.com.au, and use the discount code SEN, you'll get a nice little discount. It'll be delivered to your front door. Also, thanks to Australia's hype sneaker label, Athleticon, we've got the sneakers to give away. First Serve 15 for 15% off if you go to their website, Athleticon. That's athleticon.com. Got a pair of those to give away tonight. Also, copies of Daphne Akhurst, the woman behind the trophy, 1-300-736-736. Let's bring you up to speed what is happening with Miami. It is the biggest tournament that's been played, of course, since the Australian Open in the last month. We've had players going here, there and everywhere, but the men and the women coming together to play at the Miami Open. So the fourth round is set up like this. So from an Australian perspective, Ash Barty is still alive, and that is a good thing. She's building, got a big match coming up early hours. Not kind to us here in Australia, I've got to say, the 2 a.m. stars. Ash does love getting out early and playing at 11 a.m. That's, of course, her background of having been born in Queensland, where it is very, very light early. And that suits Ash Barty because she's up with the birds. She likes to get out early, get the job done, and get back to the hotel. So a huge match coming up around about 2 a.m. tomorrow morning up against Victoria Azarenka. But it's great to have some Australian representation. Marketa Vondrousova up against Aryna Sabalenka. So if Barty can get through that match, you would probably back in Sabalenka against Vondrousova. Sabalenka's got a 3-2 head-to-head over Barty. And we know what she brings to the table. One of the most exciting female players in the game. Power, energy, intensity up against Ash, who plays a very different style of game. So one game at a time. She's got to beat Vika first, who's obviously come off a pretty good 2020. The other part of that side of the draw, Sevastova's got through with a walkover, Simona Halep having to pull out with the injury. Anna Condiu, that's a good comeback story. Missed a lot of tennis, a very good 18-year-old who was struck down with a lot of injuries in the last few years. Defeated one of the hottest players on the tour, Iga Swiatek, in the last round, 6-4, 2-6, 6-2. So that's another fourth-round match. And then Petra Kvitova up against Elena Svitolina. 1-300-736-736. Give us a call. We want to certainly take your calls tonight here on the First Serve. And then the other side of the women's draw for Miami, Bianca Andreescu. Quite simply, when she plays, she wins more often than not. and she's played such limited tennis in the last couple of years. Pulled out a great win against Anna Samova, 7-6, 6-7, 6-4. She'll play Garbiñe Muguruza, who's in good form. How about Sorribes Tormo, the Spaniard, with that service action that I just cannot watch, to take on Jabeur, who's going beautifully as well, just consistent. And Shane Leonage, of course, from Data Driven Sports Analytics, and part of one of our podcasts, Crunching the Numbers, last year, which you can go back and listen to all the episodes at our website, thefirstserve.com.au. He is right in the Jabeur camp, doing a lot of work. So, Shane, if you're listening in tonight, you can take some of the credit for this. Jessica Pegula, how good is she going post the Australian Open? She is putting together some great performances. She'll play Maria Sakkari of Greece, and then Elise Mertens up against Osaka, who got the walkover. What we probably love to see, well, I'd love to see down the stretch of this week, Barty v. Osaka, because Naomi's been running hot. Ash is trying to get her season going. I think it'll be a great matchup for the last part of the week. And obviously there's a bit riding on the rankings. I mean, we'd probably love to see from an Australian perspective Osaka knocked out much earlier. We'll go into the rankings with Courtney Walsh in just a little while. So that's the women's side. The men, well, John in Kensington, you're going to lead us in beautifully to a young man who today certainly didn't do himself a disgrace at all, and that's Alexei Popyrin, who took on Daniil Medvedev. John, now welcome to the first serve.
Yeah, hey, buddy. Look, I was impressed with him with his game, but I was even more impressed with Jannik Sinner, because I watched that, and look, he was down and out. He lost the first set, and he was struggling with the heat. And then all of a sudden, it was like he flicked the switch, and he just, like, tore through that tiebreaker in the second set. And then when he had to hold his nerve, I don't think I've ever seen him play under pressure as good as that, because the one turning point in that match was, I don't know if you saw it, but that Russian guy always gives him problems, right? He's a really good player, that
guy.
Kachanov, that's right. Now, he didn't half on his off shot, and he was about 2 metres from the back of the court, you know? And it was on, I think it was on break point, it might have been 30 all at 5-4. And he just ran it down and over went across court and got the point, and then just served it up from there. And I thought, wow, you know, he just showed a lot of maturity in that match.
There's some great young guys on the tour, John. This is a really exciting time. And they're getting a chance to shine in Miami, because there's no Nadal, there's no Djokovic, there's no team. We know Roger's not there, so we're getting a look. We know that, you know, Medvedev's been there a little while now, and those guys just underneath Tsitsipas and co inside the top 10. But we're getting a further look at the next rung, who, for a few of them on that side of the draw, could be in a semi-final. I'll run through that in just a moment. Good on you, John. I appreciate your call. I'll put you back down. We're going to give you a prize, John. We'll go deep into the prize cabinet. We've got plenty here. We'll get all your details, and we'll certainly look after you. So the men, the way the fourth round looks, Medvedev, I'll get to the Popyrin match today. So Medvedev to play Francis Tiafoe. That was the late match that finished this afternoon. Gee, Wayne Ferreira is a pretty integral part now, the two-time Australian Open semi-finalist in the Tiafoe camp, just trying to get him to the next level. He's a huge talent, the American, pulled off a really good win against Lajovic. John Isner over Felix Auger-Aliassime to play now. Bautista Agut. How good's the young guy from Finland going? Emil Ruusuvuori. He is putting together some good tennis. I've had a good look at him in the last 3 or 4 weeks, and he won the Scandinavian battle against Mikael Emo of Sweden. So he'll play Jannik Sinner, who John's just been pumping up. We know what he's been putting together, Sinner, over the last couple of years. So he's going to be at the business end of a lot of these tournaments. Taylor Fritz, I thought, pulled out a really good win against Cam Norrie today, up against Alexander Bublik. So he is the Kyrgios of Kazakhstan. Why is it that the bad boys, who have this love-hate relationship with tennis, they are so talented? So if they absolutely loved the game and got the absolute best out of themselves, gee, be pretty exciting at the top. Bublik can play any shot on the court. We know Kyrgios can. We know Benoit Paire can do some unbelievable things, but they have this love-hate relationship with tennis. Most of the time, they hate it, but they're out there. And Bublik, today, I mean, really, I thought he was let off the hook a little by James Duckworth, who led 3-1, the Aussie, in the first set, and led 3-love in the second. unfortunately, Ducks just couldn't take his opportunities. And you give a guy like Bublik a little opening, and Ducks loves to get in, we know that. Some of his passing shots were extraordinary off both wings. He is an amazing talent to pull back two deficits. So Fritz to play Bublik, and then the other side, coming up in the early hours of tomorrow, Schwartzman, Manarino, Karatsev, our man, the Giant Slayer, is still there up against Sebastian Korda. Good matchup. Going to go through the father-sons. Another father-son who's about to go around this week. Marin Cilic up against Musetti. We know the Italian is certainly one we're putting an asterisk next to. Inside the top 100 for the first time. I love Martin Fucsovics. This guy from Hungary is one of the toughest players on the tour to beat. Thanasi just couldn't quite get there over the weekend. Thanasi Kokkinakis losing that one in three. But Thanasi, good to see him play three matches, and we hope now that he gets some real continuity. So Fucsovics to play Rublev. They've already met this season. That should be a beauty. Shapovalov up against Hercash. Umber up against Raonic, who was very good in dispensing with Jordan Thompson. Flying under the radar as much as he can for a guy so big. Big Milos, but he's playing pretty solid tennis. Galland defeated Demonor. Bit disappointing for Demon to exit that early in the tournament. Up against Sonego, the Italian. Nishikori to play Tsitsipas. So there's some really good matchups still left in the Miami draw. But we might have a quick listen to Ash Barty, because she has spoken leading into this match tomorrow morning with Victoria Azarenka, but reflecting on her win against Yelena Ostapenko on the weekend and the year ahead as the Aussies are on the road.
Today felt like it was a lot sharper, and I felt like I was really switched on and ready to go from the very first point. And I give myself another opportunity to try and do that again in another match in a couple of days' time. And I think that's probably the most pleasing thing, is that each day we continue to learn, each day we continue to grow and continue to try and develop our game and learn from our mistakes, learn from all experiences that we have.
And you were first on grandstand today. Do you have a preference as a professional, to be early on and off, or to play later in the afternoon or even at night?
Oh, the scheduling today was because we were meant to play doubles in the afternoon, and unfortunately Jen was unable to get on the court this afternoon, so that was purely from a schedule basis. To obviously, if you're playing doubles, you typically play earlier in the day. But as an Aussie, I feel like a lot of us are early risers, particularly in Brisbane. The sun's up at 4:30 in the morning during summer, so we're early birds. And I do enjoy playing first on, but then there are also really, really special moments playing in night sessions and later in the day as well.
Obviously, your first trip out of Australia in over a year, is it kind of feel surreal or just like old hat or different? Just talk a little bit about that experience.
Without a doubt, it's different. I think the whole world has had this enormous adjustment to the way that we live. And obviously, with the circumstances that we're in, we're playing in a bubble. And I think the brilliant thing is that we are in a safe environment, play and do what we love, and have the opportunity to play professional tennis. But traveling was certainly bizarre. Without a doubt, the airports, I'd never seen them quite like that before. But all in all, we feel like we're very comfortable with the fact that the tour has created a safe environment for us to play. And I think ultimately that's why we decided to come out and play again, and we're enjoying every minute.
And just talk a little bit about the match today. Outside of the two love that she had in the second set, you seem to use the court well and expand it to your strengths also. Kind of kept her a little on nerve.
Yeah, that was the goal today, was to try and bring the tennis back to my kind of rhythm as often as possible and as quickly as possible in points. And she obviously has the ability to take that away from you quite quickly, particularly off serve and first shot and off her return. So it was about being patient at times and making sure that we tried our best to neutralize and then bring the game back in our favor.
Before leaving Australia and during the season over here, you and Tyus were talking about setting up bases overseas, because you're going to be away for so long. What did you finally conclude with as far as bases are concerned, and how often are you going to go to wherever they might be?
It's at the moment still quite difficult to plan more than a week or two ahead. So at the moment, obviously, we're excited to be playing here in Miami and then into Charleston. Then we know that There's only a small little window between Charleston and Stuttgart. So I think that's quite an easy one. And I think the season will feel like, you know, touch wood, that everything stays safe for us to play and we're able to play in all of the scheduled tournaments that we've seen so far. But it should roll on quite nicely. And we're hopefully playing deep in tournaments and really busy playing matches.
How long are you going to stay away? Is it going to be a case of maybe coming back home after Wimbledon or staying right through to the end of the US Open? And when you left Brisbane, were there tears and all that at the airport with the children and your parents and the family?
Tyus and I ultimately prepared to stay away for the season. Obviously, with the quarantine laws that are in Australia, we do our 2 weeks quarantine in a hotel, and there's actually not a lot of space in the season to be able to do that, just to get home for the 2 weeks. So at this stage, yeah, we're planning to be away till after US Open and potentially right to the end of the season. And without a doubt, it was something that was new to me, new to try and wrap my head around and comprehend that we're going to be away for such an extended period. And of course, there were tears the days leading up. There were tears when I did finally leave, and then when we left, and then we're delayed and had to leave again. Like it was all kind of happening. And no, but I'm certainly happy to be here now. We're in the rhythm of playing. And I think being back out on court and competing is bringing a smile to my face. Played Vika, I think, most recently at Fed Cup a couple of years ago. So it was still a while ago now. And I know she had an exceptional year last year. And she's a great friend of mine, a brilliant player and someone who I respect and I look up to a lot for the way she's handled herself throughout her career.
And just as a follow-up, you were talking about your schedule. A lot of players have said this year, so I think less events and make more time off, because sometimes it could be like mentally taxing to be stuck in a bubble environment. Are you towards looking that like that, or is it gonna be like you could be playing like almost every like event that's possible?
There may be a few events added this year. Without a doubt, it's important to make sure that you're fit and firing and healthy, and that's your mental health as well, and knowing that weeks on the road can take its toll, but we'll do everything we can to be fresh and ready for all the tournaments that we do play. It's all exciting. My next match will be extremely tough. I'm looking forward to getting another chance to play out here. It's a brilliant event. I think for me, it's one of the most special weeks in my career from 2019. Obviously, the first time I broke into the top 10 and one of the biggest title of my career at that stage. And I think it's a week that I look back on and it brings a smile to my face. We have so many incredible memories from that week. And I think every time you come back to a place where you've had special memories or good results and good weeks, it's always exciting to be back. So it's nice to be back this week and playing some good tennis.
Indeed it is. Ash Barty, some really good insights. And the fact now she's pretty much going to be on the road for the entire year. It just makes no sense. There aren't really any windows to come back to Australia. So she may add on some events that she normally wouldn't have played in normal circumstances. So we'll wait and see for Ash. But first things first, Victoria Azarenka tomorrow morning. We need to get a break in here on the first serve. 1-300-736-736. If you want to give us a call, we'll take some calls straight out of the break. 0433-98-1116. We'll wrap up the Aussies. A lot of other talking points as well. The first serve, your home of tennis.
First serve tennis sunscreen. A quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists, providing landscape, horticultural and environmental services throughout Australia at glgcorp.com. The first serve, your home of tennis.
Indeed it is. Brett Phillips with you on a Monday night. We're always talking the world of tennis right throughout the year. This is the one sport that never stops. And, of course, you can keep an eye on our website daily, thefirstserve.com.au, all our socials. There are tournaments going left, right and centre, and hopefully we're keeping you right up to date any time you log on. A little shout-out for Hume Tennis and Community Centre. They're one of Australia's premier tournament and training venues, just 15 minutes from Melbourne Airport. 16 ITF-sized courts and accommodation available. It is the mini Melbourne Park. It's ideal for the travelling coaching groups and families. So check out humetennis.com.au. Loving taking your calls tonight. 1-300-736-736. Adam's in one turner. Adam, great to have you part of the show.
Oh, yeah, g'day, BP. I just wanted to get your thoughts, if I could, on the impact of social media in the tennis aura in the community.
Explain a little further to me.
I noticed over the summer, just amongst my family, that I grew up really interested in the likes of your Pat Rathers and the Pete Sampras, and I don't know whether it is that I didn't know what they did or didn't do off the court, but there was an aura about those players that was sort of just purely tennis based. And I wonder if nowadays, when you get the likes of the top tens that have social media footprints over the world, and we know more about them off the court than off the court, if you think that's a negative or a positive in tennis itself.
Yeah, I don't think it's a negative. I've got to say, I mean, as a broadcaster, whether I'm covering tennis or footy, I mean, you always want to know a little bit more behind the scenes of the people that you're talking about, because, you know, we're making judgments certainly on the athlete, not the person, when we're dissecting results on a week-to-week basis. But it's good to know the big picture of someone, which gives you a more rounded view as to why they're performing at the level they are or why they're not performing at the level that they can. So, yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, I'm not a huge person on social media. I certainly don't sit there 24/7 flicking through, and there is so much to consume, let me tell you, with players and tennis and everything else. But look, I think, you know, certainly from our show's point of view, we want to get to know the person as well as the tennis player as much as we possibly can. So I don't see it as a massive negative. Hang on there, Adam. Got a prize for you. We'll dig into the cabinet. Everyone who calls in tonight, there is a prize for you. We've got the Athletic and Sneakers, got the Sunblessed Sunscreen. We've got copies of Daphne Akers' book, and we'll deliver those to everyone this week. Charlie's in Toorak. Hi, Charlie.
Brett Phillips, how you going?
Going well. What do you got?
Just in regards to Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal and Serena Williams at retirement there, a lot of money involved. All these players at the top, you know, the Cornea and the Stan Azarenka and the Novak Djokovic's and the Victoria Azarenka's and the Kerbers and all that. Right. It's a lot. It's too hot. It's too hot, Brett. It's too hot to be get out there playing in 40-degree weather in the sunshine. But anyway, yeah, I just think there's a lot of greed going on. Federer, Fed Express, my brother, by the way. A lot of greed, and, it's not bad, but they could do a lot better by mixing it up and giving a few other people a chance. Maybe they're just too good, you know?
Yeah. Interesting call, Charlie. I mean, they have been. I mean, yeah, the top of the men's game, you know, Roger, Rafa, Novak, have been too good for a long, long time. But I tell you what, there's the change of the guard is happening. It's good. We're going to be blessed with the next crop who aren't going to achieve the numbers of those three. But for me, I want Serena and Roger and Rafa to keep going as long as they can stand vertical on a tennis court and break records. I love that. I think the next crop can wait as far as I'm concerned. But I also don't mind seeing them break through. So it's a good time. It's a good time when you've got those top stars still playing really well and they're hungry to take the scalp of the younger ones who are trying to take their scalp. I think that's when you've got the best tennis. So we can go back through the eras and dissect all that. Charlie, got a prize for you. Hang on, we'll get all your details. John's in Gisborne. John?
How are you, Brett?
Good, John.
I'd just like to say how much I truly hearing Ash Barty being interviewed. She always gives such an honest interview and always includes her whole team in yes. each interview, saying we all the does. Time, not just her.
No, it's always we. It's always her and Tyres and everyone else, the strength and conditioning team, Nikki, her manager. It's a team, and that's how she refers. She loves her team sport, so she's grown up in that team sport mentality of including everyone else. But look, she's polished. She's had to do a lot of media, more media in the last probably 2 years than she'd done in the years previous, and that's because of, you know, her status in the game now. But yeah, she can be challenging too. I mean, Ash has sort of become quite line and length, so you've got to dig a little deeper. That's our responsibility on this side of the microphone to try and ask her some, you know, intelligent questions, some questions that will provoke a real thought, sometimes the Junos in there aren't necessarily firing like the players are. Players can have off days and the Junos can walk in there and just ask some really off questions. I've said in many press conferences at the tennis and there's some peculiar questions that certainly get asked. But look, she is a great ambassador, Ash Barty, on and off the court. As she has said, tennis won't define her, but this is a big year for her to be now out on the road. For all the Australians, it's going to be a real challenge. Some will handle the bubble life better than others, but Ash is one. If she can keep playing a lot of matches and be in that rhythm and routine, I think she'll be able to handle it pretty well. Good on you, John. Got plenty of prizes to give away tonight. We'll get all your details as well. Specky's out on the road. Specky, welcome to the first serve.
G'day, BP. How are you, mate?
Going well, thank you.
Hey, BP, I caught up with an old mate of mine, an old football mate, Benny Robertson, who's doing a hell of a lot of work behind the scenes for the well-being of Australian tennis players. Do you know him at all?
What's his first name?
Ben Robertson.
Okay.
Working at Tennis Australia. I was absolutely gobsmacked down with him for about an hour, a couple of pots of beer, and just hear just what his year's been like in regards to supporting these young people and getting them up and about. And he does a lot of work with, you know, the whole spectrum of adult tennis all the way through down through to the talent squads of under 14s.
I've heard the name.
But just the work that goes in behind the scenes to get our Australian tennis players at to the level of to become elite players. It's pretty phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's a pathway, and I think TA, like a lot of organisations, and we've seen, let's just, you know, look at 18 footy clubs in the biggest sport in this country, putting a lot more into that player welfare area, because it is more than just the athlete. It's the person that you're trying to grow as well. And tennis is a tough sport. It's pretty brutal out there. And a lot of players will go straight into the pros. Others are going down the college path to have a bit of a backup plan academically if tennis doesn't quite work out. And that's not for everyone. But it's about, you know, coming out of the sport, I suppose, with a worldly view and not just being in that bubble. I mean, we had Todd Lay on. I encourage anyone to go back and listen to our podcast of our live show last week. Todd Lay, who was, the first young player at 11 to get a contract with IMG into the Bolotteri Academy at 12. And by 17, the sport had spat him out. And it's been tough for him to deal with in the last 10 to 15 years. He's trying to come out the other side of that. So I think tennis and a lot of sports will learn a lot of lessons about the person, not just the athlete, but the person, and really making sure they come out of the system in good nick. Good on you, Specky. Got a prize for you as well, my friend. Hang on the line. Quick wrap-up of the Aussies before we go to the break. So Barty's still alive, which is great, in Miami. Isla Tomjanovic, good win against Potapova. And then, she served for the first set against Naomi Osaka, lost in a tight one, 7-6, 6-4. Look, Isla is probably where I think she probably is now. I know she got to 39 in the world, and her game is pretty sound. But it's just at times when you're playing the better players, they make you overhit. And, you know, Osaka can just control, you know, that controlled aggression. They are coming through thick and fast, her ground strokes, but they can be really controlled at the same time. For Isla, it just not quite having that ability. She's pressed a lot of these players really close, taking a set, and she's defeated, you know, a couple of more accomplished players along the journey. But, you know, I don't think we're going to be sort of hanging our hat that Isla Tomljanovic is going to be having really any sort of deep run at those major WTA events or a Grand Slam. Storm Sanders, I do think there's some upside to Storm. She's 188 in the world. Had a real chance to take that to three against the informed Jessica Pegula. We love the lefty, so we just want to see her play a full year on the tour, Storm, and hopefully by year's end, she can be really knocking on the door of the top 100. Quick wrap-up of the men. Demon Ori, be disappointed with that, losing in three. Highly competitive. He's got to get his season going. He's there at 23 in the world. The toughest jump now is to try and get inside that top 20. The calibre of player in front of him, it's enormous. So he'll go to the clay now and try and build some momentum. Tomo, disappointing loss to Raonic. Had a good win against Ilbonis in the first round. Had the neck injury, so trying to build into the year at 61. Can he get out of that 50, 60, 40 region? Not quite sure. I love his competitiveness. I love the fact that he makes life pretty difficult for his opponents, but he just doesn't quite have that weapon that may take him to the next level. Popperin's got huge upside. Today against Medvedev, we go back to the Australian Open when they last played, and Daniil basically blew him off the court. So the development in 18 months of Alexei Popperin, and we'll hear a little bit of him after the next break. He's well managed. He's got a good coaching team around him. His mum's there as that family link, just to have some sort of normality, if you like, in the tennis bubble. Big serve, big forehand, directs the ball around the court really well. So Medvedev today is a step up. Just his weight of shot and what he can do is just that step up. But 2 to 82 in the world, The margins are very, very small when you lose in the manner that he did. But I'll tell you what, 2-5 down in that second set, he could have easily just said, this is all too hard, and he picked himself off the canvas to take that second set tiebreaker. And then, yeah, Medvedev, I mean, he was, well, legless, really. He could not stand up at the end. So Alexei probably disappointed down the stretch. He didn't take advantage of that. James Duckworth lost to Bublik today, 6-4, 6-4. So Duck is also a very good player to watch. I mean, he loves to, he's got a decent serve. He loves to get in serve volley or certainly get to the net. So he can play in any part of the court. It's just trying to finish off these matches or build on the advantage that he sets. And he just can't quite get to that next level. It's tough. Chris O'Connell, boy, oh boy, that was some sort of match against Joao Sousa, who, well, I think his first ATP main draw win in about 15 months. We know that he was off the tour for the indiscretion, but 7-6, 6-7, 7-5. You know, it's just stiff that someone has to lose. He's dynamic, O'Connell. That backhand is absolute world-class. It's not just the Wawrinka-Federer single-handed really coming through with some momentum with that backhand. He can play three or four different type backhands to great effect. And Thanasi, well, I think he'll build, no doubt. He's at 223, but he just needs to keep playing some tennis and the wins will start to come. You lose to Fucsovics, 7-6, 6-7, 6-4. A bit like O'Connell, very, very small margins. A quick break. Back with more on the first serve. Your calls and Courtney Walsh to try and explain the rankings to the layman out there, because it's damn complicated.
First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis. At sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists. At glgcorp.com, the First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back, Brett Phillips with you on a Monday night. We're talking the world of tennis as we do. Keep an eye on our website, thefirstserve.com.au. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well. The father sons we love, Sasha Zverev, Casper Ruud, Sebastian Korda. What about young Leo Berg? It's doubtful whether Sweden's Leo Berg has managed to get to the... Leo Borg has managed to get to the end of a single interview without the subject of his father being raised in some form. Spoiler alert, this one was no different. But when you are following in the footsteps of 11-time Grand Slam singles champion Bjorn Borg, arguably one of the finest players to ever pick up a racket, there is going to be scrutiny, and there certainly has been. When Borg Jr. was handed a wildcard entry to qualifying for the 2019 Junior Championships at Wimbledon, his dad's old stomping ground, having won 5 Grand Slam titles there, he became the centre of a media storm. Understandably, especially given he was just 15 years old at the time, Borg was guarded, wary of saying too much. In the end, he quite reasonably spoke about blocking out comparisons and just focusing on himself. Well, 2 years on, things are a little different. The questions and history lessons remain, but Borg appears more at ease with the subject, largely because his tennis is actually starting to do some of the talking. His quote this week, "I'm getting there and people are judging me more on my tennis and not simply focusing on me being Bjorn Borg's son." He's playing a challenger in Spain as a wild card this week, and he's actually got, I think, a wild card into qualifying for the ATP event in that event in Marbella in Spain. So there's a challenger and an ATP event over the next 2 weeks. We will continue to monitor, Leo Borg, the son of the great Bjorn Borg. Courtney Walsh is the leading tennis writer for The Australian. He tonight is going to try and explain the rankings. Walshy, great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, good evening, Brett. I've got a complex matrix in front of me, and I've also got a dartboard, and I do feel like probably more accuracy with the darts, and I'm not a great darts player.
All right, well, she, we've got a few minutes here. Let's just try and paint a little picture, because it is complicated, and I think there's a lot of people who would say freezing the world rankings due to COVID was probably quite a sensible decision by the governing bodies last year, as there was plenty of tournaments that did fall by the wayside, but the trouble is actually restarting them effectively, which is causing a lot of divided opinion as to what should and shouldn't be done.
Look, no doubt about that. And I suppose the most obvious players who have been targeted for some criticism, and I think absolutely incorrectly in my view, Ash Barty as the world number one, and Roger Federer being inside the top 10. You've obviously also had Bianca Andreescu, who's the former US Open champion a couple of years ago. She didn't play at all in 2020, similar to Barty, was off the tour all the way through the COVID period. And yet they retain their rankings inside the top 10, and that brings with it certain privileges when they return to the tour. So some people are critical of that. I think they had no other option but to put into action a rankings plan that would enable protection if players couldn't travel, which was clearly the case last year for some. And we still don't know. I mean, we still issues, I think, this year in terms of players being able to get to events. Nick Kyrgios, for example, is not travelling at the moment. So, you know, it's going to be effective for some players.
Yeah, no doubt. So just on the WTA side, because the WTA and the ATP are taking a little bit of a different stance here. So the points from the 2019 events that weren't played in 2020 but are scheduled in 2021 will drop off after 2 years. That includes Miami, meaning that Ash Barty, who won Miami 2 years ago, will drop those 1,000 points next Monday and replace them with her 2021 results. So in the live WTA rankings at the moment, this is why it's a fascinating week ahead for Ash. I mean, she's 416 points ahead of Osaka. And then the points from 2019 events on the WTA Tour that weren't played last year and are not scheduled for this year will drop off when that event is next scheduled. So the best example of that is Indian Wells. So the players will hang on to those points they earned at Indian Wells in 2019 until further notice, as to whether we know whether Indian Wells actually goes ahead this year, Walshy.
Yeah, look, that's absolutely right. So we've got, I suppose, two slightly different ways the two respective tours are approaching this, but both begin to be enacted this week. And again, I think Barty and Federer are the good examples to use. So Barty and Federer were the champions in 2019 in Miami.
Yep.
Barty loses the entirety of her 1,000 ranking points she earned. Now she's obviously trying to redo them. She's through to a fourth round, as we know, playing Victoria Azarenka. Federer, who is not playing this week, he loses 500 points. So he loses half his ranking points. So effectively for the next few months up into midway through August when Cincinnati Masters is on, which is basically where the tour began again last year for the men after the tour suspension, players in the men's ranks can take half the points that they earned in 2019, like Federer has this week, or, for example, like Kyrgios has with 45 points. He got 90 points a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And or if they actually play those events and do better, they can take those 2021 results. And so, for example, for someone like Kyrgios, if he'd made the fourth round or the quarterfinals, if he was playing this week, he would take those points instead of the points that, you know, he got a couple of years ago. But again, for Nick, for example, he won Washington, D.C. In 2019, beat Medvedev in that final, a really good win.
Mm.
There doesn't seem much point necessarily for him to play that tournament unless he can win it again, because he'll get half the points, which is effectively making the final. So, you know, it gives him some options. But if you get beaten in the first round, you obviously want to go and get, you know, more points. That would make sense. On the women's rankings, though, as we see, effectively from now, if the tournament's been played, you know, a couple of years ago, the points will start to drop off.
Yep.
There are some exceptions to that rule, as we know. So there'll be a case with Iga Swiatek, the French Open champion last October. She keeps those points for winning the French Open regardless of how she fares in the French Open in a couple of months' time this year. And those points from winning it in October last year will drop off in about 6 months' time when we get back to when that tournament was played. So certainly there can be some confusion, but good rule of thumb, I think, is if the tournament was played in 2019,
yes,
but not in 2020, you know, in the women's, that the points are going to start dropping off completely.
Mm-hmm.
And in the men's, they're going to half of them are going to drop off from now on. So that gives you a sort of a rule of thumb. And then by about Cincinnati in the men's rankings will just about be back to the full cycle. The women's rankings will take a bit longer to get back to the full, you know, regular cycle. That's almost another year away, but that's the way that will play out.
So hopefully, hopefully the world remains fairly stable over the coming months and we have some normality, that rankings, you know, should slowly right themselves as we get, you know, right into the rhythm of the tours this year.
No doubt. And look, I think what's probably happened is that by and large, it's protected to an extent that the players that were already ranked inside the top 100, but we have seen players capable of making moves. And Alexei Popperin is an example of that, sort of breaking into the top 100 after that win a few weeks back in Singapore. And then, you know, continuing his good form. So he's been one that's been able to break back into the top 100. So it's not been beyond players outside the top 100 to make some moves as long as they've been able to play. But by and large, it's protected someone like Kyrgios, who hasn't wanted to travel.
Yep.
Until this stage, Barty, who hadn't necessarily wanted to travel either, you know, did afford them some protection.
Walshy, it's not a straightforward thing. I'm probably a lot of people out there have just been closing their eyes trying to dissect all that. But I think, you know, certainly read the information. It's there. It's, you know, the rankings. Well, I suppose I've always been a point of, conjecture at different times. In fact, just before I let you go, I mean, I didn't want to get too deep into this, but the story around sort of, you know, Benoit Paire is an interesting one because I think he's ranked about, 31 in the rankings. He's obviously received a fair bit of criticism for recent comments suggesting that he was content with receiving paychecks for first-round defeats at tournaments. I mean, he's an interesting character. He's not happy with a lot of the protocols that are going on the circuit at the moment and that he should be penalised for basically tanking, Walshy.
Oh, look, I don't doubt that he's breaching best efforts clauses and that there are certainly mechanisms in place to punish him. And that has happened in the last week, obviously, with the fine. Whether he should have been punished before this, I think that's probably an argument that can be made. And even this week, for example, it's not, you know, his ranking would be well in the hundreds now, given he hasn't been able to win matches since he's rejoined the circuit. But by virtue of the protection that he has, he's seeded. So he makes the second round this week, you know, via a bye. So a bigger check again. But he's clearly an outlier. You know, other players are certainly struggling, I think, in the bubbles.
Yeah.
Benoit has had bigger issues, and he's made that clear. And, you know, it's not ideal, but it's, you know, I think he would be very much the exception to the rule in terms of exploiting that mechanism that's in place.
Mate, always love the chat. We'll read your great work covering tennis, covering the footy, of course, in the Australia, mate. Really appreciate your time.
Absolute pleasure, Rick.
Courtney Walsh just giving us a little take on the rankings, which is a big point of discussion on the tour. Yarra Tennis Coaching is Melbourne's independent tennis coaching program. It's at a beautiful Eaglemont Tennis Club run by coach extraordinaire Shane Scrutton. There's programs for every age and standard. You can give Shane a call direct 0414 373 586 or check out yarratennis.com.au.
First Serve Tennis Sunscreen, a quality Australian-made sunscreen to protect those that love their tennis at sunblesssunscreens.com.au and GLG Green Life Group, your open space specialists, providing landscape, horticultural and environmental services throughout Australia at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Quick wrap-up on this Monday night here on the First Serve. Loved your calls, your texts this hour. Plenty of prizes coming your way. We're just talking to Courtney Walsh about the rankings and how it's been affected through COVID. I'll tell you one man who's jumped up this week. Gee, we've been blessed from Switzerland the last 20 years. Roger Federer, Stan Wawrinka, Dominic Stefan Stricker. The wild card. Won the Lugano Switzerland Challenger. There was a few Aussies in that draw. Tomic, Sandiland, Vukic, Polmans. But the young Swiss, he's just 18 years of age. He jumped up 452 spots to 422 in the world. Is there another young man emerging from Switzerland? We'll keep an eye on that. All thanks to Melbourne's leading synthetic grass court surface and construction specialists, Asti Tennis Courts. They're trusted by Melbourne tennis clubs and councils. So check out aste.com.au. Ash Barty will be setting the alarm 2 a.m. tomorrow morning for Ash up against Vika Azarenka. We'll cover Miami in depth down the stretch this week through our website, thefirstserve.com.au, and all our socials, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. And we'll do it all again next Monday night from 8 o'clock. Hit them well, folks, and have a magnificent week.